Everybody, and welcome to the Prime Subjective, a Star Trek podcast where apparently I use the intro to do some vocal warm-ups. I'm Chris Newcomer, your host. Today we will be discussing two episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. We'll be discussing The High Ground and The Survivors, from season three, back when they still had many opportunities to use just really cool, titles for episodes, and before they had to get obscure towards the seventh season. with me, as always, we have Michael Henley.
Hey, everybody, is Michael Henley coming at you. Wow.
That's good. Do not apologize for that. That was
sorry,
good.
I had my morning zoo filter on. I don't know if that translated.
We're basically doing a radio program. We should have your morning zoo on. Yeah. That's good. That's good. Yeah.
That's my sound effects.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. I got this down because I'll be the girl. I'll just laugh. Oh, you.
Do so you come funny. With the car? And speaking
I
of
feel that way sometimes because I laugh so much that I'm like, I'm turning into that person.
And that voice you're hearing now, that lovely female voice you're hearing, is Carrie Coleman Henderson.
Hello and happy April Fool's Day to all my fools out there.
Yes, we are recording on April Fool's Day. This will likely drop a few days afterward. But, if we drop any jokes where we're like, this is a Star Wars podcast, can you? Then you'll know it's an April Fool's joke that we're playing on ourselves. Because we
had a good
know
one.
And a very well executed
very
one.
Very good one.
Obviously well executed. Well, before we dive into the meat of the trek, which is alternate name for the podcast, Meat of the Trek. We should talk about
Trek. Ooh, I like that. I'm writing it down.
We should talk about the what's going on with the people who are talking about the Trek. So, Michael, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Before we started recording, I was just telling you, Chris, that we just came back from a trip to my girlfriend's parents' house for the holiday weekend, which was super nice. Before that, me and my girlfriend took a trip to New York City to see two Broadway shows, one being Merrily We Roll Along, starring Jonathan Groff and Dana Radcliffe and Lindsay Mendez, and the second being Sweeney Todd, starring Aaron DeVate and Sutton Foster. And we had tremendous luck because you constantly Carrie's hear favorite. About substitution. Your ironic favorite or your legit favorite?
Carrie went to high school with Aaron DeVate.
Did you really?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't think he remembers me, but maybe, I don't know.
We just in the car, we just had a whole Aaron DeVite-a-thon because my girlfriend was basically like, you should listen to Next to Normal. I was like, okay.
That would hurt me so bad.
Sure.
I'd be like, it's like hard to like watch somebody you knew as a little kid sometimes. You're like, you're just a little kid. What's wrong?
That little kid has a Tony Award now. But I mean, he had one of the ones.
Maybe he's listening. No, I don't mean to throw shade. It's just a weird feeling.
So we had tremendous luck because you hear about cast substitutions all the time and everything. You're just like, we're not going to get all the people we want to see. We're not going to, something's going to happen. And nope, everything went perfectly. We had a splendid time. Fantastic shows, both of them closing sometime in the next 6 weeks. So it sounds hollow to recommend them. But I mean, if anyone gets a chance to, especially if you're a big Sondheim fan, I strongly recommend them. We had a fantastic time with both of them, especially Merrily We Roll Along, which I feel like this is my first exposure to it. And after everything I've heard, this kind of really feels like a real it's been on and off, like off Broadway and not and whatnot since, all through the 90s and whatever. But this feels like a real vindication tour since the original run was so brief. And it's kind of an overlooked gem for the Sondheim songbook. So we had a great time with it.
You also saw my buddy, Jacob Keith Watson, who played a lot of the different characters, but he played Jonathan Groff's love interest's dad, like the Southern dad. He plays that guy as a bald.
Oh,
and he's like,
yes.
He was like one of like the, I feel like he's like always like the lead ensemble guy. And also he's been in so many Broadway shows, but he's so talented.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Very funny as the disapproving dad. Very funny.
Yes. Yes. and like younger than me, which I love that. He's like playing this like 6-year-old man. He is absolutely 37 years old.
But the show moves backwards. So who can say really?
Who can say, right? Who can say really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that production too. It was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you got to see it. That's great. Carrie, how are you
doing? Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you over this very loud Discovery Season 5 trailer I was watching. It's like, I better watch it. I better watch it. You said you saw it. No, I did, but I wanted to watch it again. So I was like, I'll quick watch it while they're talking.
That's nice.
So I was like, I hope he talks for a minute and a half because I'm going to listen to this trailer.
As a first time anyone has ever wished that for me. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So anyway, yeah. What am I doing? I don't know, guys. I don't know how I'm doing.
Did you have a birthday in the past couple weeks?
No, I had a birthday in February. And
yeah.
I haven't really had a chance to really celebrate it. I'm sure we talked about my birthday. I'm sure.
Well, happy double belated birthday.
I don't know. I mean, we had a nice Easter weekend and that's it. So I just want to talk about Star Trek. What are we talking about, guys? Hey, Chris, how are you? Sorry, so distracted right now.
Yeah, I know. She like really just wants to talk about this trailer for Discovery that I've only seen half of. We'll get there. We'll get there. I'm doing well. I've had a busy couple of weeks. I went to New York as well last weekend and I saw Oh Mary, which is the play starring Cole Scola. And they wrote the play basically with no knowledge of Mary Todd Lincoln, and they are leaving the play also still having no knowledge of really Mary Todd Lincoln. It's very funny, but absurd.
So they were like, let's write a play about her, but also let's not find out anything about
her. It was like basically the storyline is that Cole is Mary Todd Lincoln, but Abe Lincoln met her on the cabaret circuit, and like she was trying to make it big as a cabaret star, and all she wants to do is go back on the stage. And then they bring in John Wilkes Booth as her acting coach.
Yes, I see.
And secretly there's this like gay love affair between John Wilkes Booth and Abe Lincoln. It's very funny, very absurd. And it was good. And Judith Light was there. I also feel like whenever you go to the theater in New York, there's a chance Judith Light will be there because she just is, you know, of the theater, of the, she's wonderful. But I saw that. And then what else I did? We had our 1-year anniversary show at a Tavern on Camac for Thank You Places, which was so packed. People were sitting on the edge of the stage. We crammed like 45 people upstairs at Tavern, which was really cool.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been really, really successful there. And I think we're just going to grow from there, which is awesome. What else has been going on? I think that's pretty much it. I did a lot of baking for Easter. I made a challah bread with Easter eggs in it. So just to really make every version of religion angry at me for just mixing them all up. I made a cheesecake that was really good. And I've doing a lot of fun stuff. But that's what's going on with me. And but now let's talk about the start. So there has been in the Trek in the News, Discovery is coming on Thursday the 4th. That's likely when this episode will drop. So it may be today that you're hearing this episode. The new season of Discovery will premiere tonight. Both Carrie and Mike have fully watched the trailer. I have watched the first 45 seconds. So we're going to give two full opinions and one half opinion on what we think of the trailer. opinions first.
I want to talk about that. But before I forget, I also want to save some time maybe at the end of this podcast because I really want to know if you guys have watched The Three-Body Problem yet, not Star Trek.
All the way through.
One episode, one so far.
Okay. So we'll just talk about it a little bit. But anyway, Star Trek Discovery Season 5 features an intergalactic treasure hunt for the greatest treasure in the known galaxy. What is it, guys?
Gold Press Latinum Extreme.
The real treasure is the friends we made along the way.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yes.
I think that's what it's going to be.
I just feel like they've done this before, though.
I do kind of feel that way. Like this feels
they're
very
always hunting for something. Like they're always running
and
around
something that is
for
like
something
like universe wide, you know. Mm-hmm.
I feel like they should raise the stakes all the time. We talked about this, like how much bigger can the stakes be possibly raised on this
they
show?
Should have they should have judgmentally like lowered them, basically, where in that ad copy, they should have been like a treasure hunt to find the galaxy's like fourth or fifth best treasure, you know, right. Like, you know, like it's pretty good. Got some coupons. Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel like in the 90s, you know, the blue shows would be okay with being like, we got to find a hidden Romulan relic from 4 million years ago. Like, that's fine. But it's like a relic of like all of the galaxy. I don't know. That's too much.
Or Picard goes on an archaeology adventure or something like that, you know, where it's doesn't mean much to the galaxy, but it means something to him.
Yeah. Or like maybe sort of like I'm thinking House Hunters, where they all have to go home and they have to choose three places that they want to live.
You know what? It has to be.
With really, really made up budgets. Like we both manage a Rite Aid. And we've got $4 million to spend on a home.
I have three bars of gold pressed platinum. How far can that get me?
How far? What kind of down payment will that afford me in the far future Delta Quadrant? They showed like some sort of little thing that looked like it was like a box that had some secrets that was opening up. Mm-hmm. And also they had some stuff with, I guess it was either Saru or Michael Burnham saying, all things must come to an end, which is literally the name of the final episode of
So serious. Next Generation. Isn't she just so serious? I know.
Well, that's the showrunner's fault for making this a little too serious, a little too earnest. You know,
when they take themselves a little too seriously. That's, I guess, my biggest critique now. But
earnest, I'm okay with. But I feel like sometimes they lean too much into just like not just serious, but like dour. You know?
Yeah, I agree.
I see some fan theories. Some people think it's a Bajoran thing. So
that'd be cool.
Yeah.
There might be some.
Avery Brooks comes back as a.
Oh.
That's the biggest fan theory of them all.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be cool.
There may be something to do with multiverse travels. People can hop in and out of those mirror universes at will, perhaps.
Or show up on Lower Decks, maybe.
Show up on Lower Decks.
Do a crossover just like Strange New Worlds did.
And it'll be one of those things where like the last episode, it was all a dream. And then they start over again. You know?
I love it.
Like
Newhart?
The past. Yeah, like Newhart. Yeah. Or it's like a lot of other shows I've seen. Ooh, I just
know that we are all technically too young to even know that about Newhart. And yet we do.
Yeah, but that's like that's like a trivia question. That's like a pub quiz question that like you have to know the answer to. Just like the various spellings of the word chi for Scrabble. I just watched Chicken Nugget, which is a K-drama. I'll talk about that later. I've got a lot of other things that I watched besides Star Trek.
I'm really not interested in talking about.
I've heard about this
but
one.
But I want to bring it up. Oh, no, I can't bring it up because it's total spoiler for the end. Anyway, I can't do that to you guys.
The end of the K-drama? Okay. I don't know that I'm going to watch it, so I think that's okay.
Okay. Well, you know, but if there's people listening, if there's anybody listening and you're going to watch this show, just go for like 2 seconds.
Or just fast forward for like a minute.
Fast forward or just makes noises like blah, 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 and then you can hear it later. The end, it's like, all of these things happened, but there's this problem, but we can solve it because we have this time travel button. And if you just press this button, you can go back to any point in time. So it just ends at the beginning again.
Oh.
So simple, right?
That's a convenient button to have. I mean,
if you're listening, you can stop going blah, 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 blah now.
Right.
How do they know to know that?
That's not my problem.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah.
It actually sounds like this book that I was reading that is the same author who wrote Station 11.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote a book called, let me find it, my little library.
Is this Emily St. James, I think?
Emily St. John, yeah.
Emily St. John, I'm sorry. Mandel. Yes.
And the book is called The Sea of Tranquility.
It's such a good book. I read that. Yes.
It's an incredible book. But there's
that book.
That time travel is there in a big way.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
But also Emily St. John Mandel, man, she just knows what she's doing.
Sea of Tranquility,
somehow this is getting even higher on my reading list now, actually, knowing it's about time travel. I mean,
it's also like not that long. I think it's like maybe four. It's not even, I think it's like a, I listen to everything, so it's a 5-hour book to me. Books are all based on listening.
Oh, I see. Well, it's also it's written very lovely, like easy to read too. You feel like you're doing a chore. It's kind of fun to read.
Well, that's also why Station 11 was so good, because it was like, yes, it's a post-apocalyptic sort of, you know, novel, but no one's getting like, there's not constant action. It's actually kind of a gentle post-apocalypse experience, which is what I'm looking for when our apocalypse comes.
Me too.
So, yeah. More gentle. Experience. I think it should be, because it's post-apocalyptic. Apocalyptic, right.
Well, it's
is
like
very
20 years.
Aggressive.
Yeah.
But like very aggressive, you know? After that, we kind of want a little bit of a downtime.
Lull. Yeah.
A little bit of a lull between apocalypses.
Yeah, I'd love that very much.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
Star Trek Discovery. If I know Star Trek Discovery, they'll disappoint us in some way.
we're coming into this at this very differently than we did when we first started this podcast. And we were like, Jay, we saw our co-host Jay, who was like, I hate this show. We were like, we like this show, Jay. Jeez. And now we're all like, the show is going to disappoint.
We're like, where's Jay?
Where's Jay to be the balance for us? We've had to fill in for his voice.
I know. I'm like, I love this show so much. It makes my heart excited and my body tingles. And
that's exactly what you said.
Part of the show. No, I know. You know what I said.
Well, how times have changed. Well, we'll get into that next week when we start discussing. We're going to do that, right? We're going to watch Discovery.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Just wanted to double check. Okay, that's just they're verbally signing contracts for this season 4 of Prime's Objective. Of course, we'll be once again paid with chickens and goodwill and maybe a free T-shirt here and there.
Chicken can be expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want a live chicken for my backyard, even though they are legal in Philadelphia. And the rats would get it, so maybe not.
Wait, just say they are illegal in Philadelphia?
I believe it's illegal to have a chicken in your backyard in Philadelphia.
Livestock. It's probably livestock. It's probably included in our livestock law.
I think it's an odd whatever type of animal it is you can have back in your backyard is like an odd thing. It's like a weird list. I think in New Jersey it's fine, because I think I know people who have chickens and roosters. And
wait
stuff.
A second. I once visited a house and we were house hunting in Germantown. Does Germantown count as Philadelphia?
I hope so, because that's where I am.
Well, they had chickens. They had chickens, so maybe it's...
Well, maybe it's outside of, like, the domains of some part of the city. I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay.
Well, to do further research on that, curious. We'll report back on you.
Yeah, we'll report back on the chicken law in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia chicken laws. Because we're actually here to discuss 2 episodes of Star Trek, which we should dive into.
Yeah.
We're going to start... we've got 2 episodes. We've got The Survivors and The High Ground. Who wants to? Which one should we start with? High Ground or Survivors? What do we think?
I'd like to start with High Ground because it's first in the episode order in the series. Also, because I only watched, much like your viewing of the Discovery trailer, I only watched part of
The Survivors.
The Survivors. Oh. No, wait a second. No, wait. Backwards. I got that backwards.
Yeah, Survivors is the one that's first in the viewing order.
Yeah. I got that totally backwards.
Guys. Oh, okay.
So you watched the Survivors first.
Okay.
So you watched all of the Survivors, Carrie?
I watched the Survivors, but I only watched part of the High Ground. I do remember it, though.
Mike and I will reenact the end of it for you.
Thank you so much. That's what I was hoping for.
Damn it, Beverly. Well, yeah, no, because I was about to say, I mean, you know, because I just wanted to make sure, if only because Survivors is a tough episode to talk about without talking about the ending, unfortunately.
The ending is
No. Survivors
is very important.
Survivors is important. But I also do remember it.
Well, here is the plot of The Survivors, season 3, episode 3 of Star Trek Next Generation. The Federation Starship Enterprise D, under the command of Captain Jean-Luc Picard. Once again, they start every single Wikipedia article with that, under the command of Captain Jean-Luc Picard. There's only maybe 3 episodes in the entire series under the command of that lady, with the Borg lady or Commander Riker or whatever. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. The Federation Starship Enterprise D responds to a distress call from a Federation colony on Delta Rana 4. And discovers the planet to be devastated and devoid of life, save for a patch of land containing a house and vegetation. Transporting to the surface, the away team meets the human occupants of the house, Kevin and Rishon Uxbridge, who claim to have witnessed the attack that destroyed the colony, but are unaware that they are the only survivors. Kevin! The team, finding nothing of interest save for a small music box, insists that the Uxbridges return to the Enterprise for safety, but they refuse. Aboard the Enterprise, Counselor Troi begins to hear the music from the music box in her mind constantly, each repetition slightly louder than the last, which eventually reduces her to a screaming hysterics, and Dr. Crusher is forced to place her in an induced coma. An unknown spacecraft appears and attacks the Enterprise, then flees. The Enterprise gives chase, but is unable to overtake the spaceship. Eventually, Captain Picard orders the Enterprise to return to the planet. Picard transports to the surface personally. Kevin suggests that they were spared because they are pacifists. Upon the away team's return, the spaceship appears in orbit again, but Picard orders the Enterprise to leave the system first, believing that the crew is being toyed with. Returning to the planet again, Picard transports to the surface to plead with the Uxbridges to leave with him. After being refused again, Picard tells them the Enterprise will remain to protect them as long as they live and returns to the ship. As long as you're alive, I'm not going to leave. The alien spaceship appears again, destroys the Uxbridge's home. Picard orders an attack on the craft and, unlike the previous encounters, easily destroys it. Playing on a suspicion, Picard has the Enterprise move to a higher orbit. After a short time, the Uxbridge's home reappears. Picard orders the Uxbridges beamed to the Enterprise and confronts Kevin with his suspicions. Kevin and Rishon's house was destroyed in the attack, and Rishon was killed. But Kevin, who is not human, has recreated them both and created the alien warship to dissuade the Enterprise from investigating. Kevin admits the truth, and the illusory Rishon disappears. He removes the torturous music that he had placed in Troi's mind to prevent her from telepathically identifying him. Kevin reveals that he is... A dude. He is a dude.
He's endowed is what he was trying to say. It was like really inappropriate.
He's really endowed. And he's also related to Anne Dowd. Our lady of the HBO short series. An immortal energy being being with vast powers who fell in love with Rishon and settled with her on Rana 4. When the planet was attacked by an aggressive, destructive species called the Huznak, he refused to join the fight in accordance with his species' pacifism. Rishon, however, died defending the colony. Stricken with grief, Kevin lashed out with his vast powers and wiped out the entire Huznak species, over 50 billion. Horrified by his crime, he chose self-exile to the planet, creating the replicas of Rishon in their house to spend the rest of eternity. Picard states they are not qualified to be his judge, having no laws to fit the magnitude of his crime, and the Enterprise leaves Kevin and his illusion in peace. Picard later opines in his log that a being as powerful as him is best left alone. And that's the survivors. Wow. That's a deep episode.
I didn't realize how ridiculous him being named Kevin was until we went over that. Synopsis of the show.
Well, her name is like Rishon, and he's like,
it's like Rishon and Kevin. It's like she meets him at a wherever train station or whatever. They said, Oh, are you human? Yes, I am human. My name is Kevin. It is a human name.
It's the first human name he read.
And I feel like that's an even effective detail, you know, the idea that like that's
right.
That's the extent of how well he prepared his human disguise, you know?
Right. And I guess, but then Uxbridge is his, did she take his name? So is Uxbridge his last name? I feel like maybe Kevin Uxbridge is the person he must have like Uxbridge. His body. He was like, he died. I'll take his identity or something. I do like the actors who played, that's John Anderson and Anne Haney. John Anderson is Kevin Uxbridge and Anne Haney as Rishon. Mm-hmm. And Anne Haney has been in a million things.
Yes, I recognize her for so many things. And even Star Trek things. I feel like she's been in other Star Trek episodes, hasn't she?
She's been in other Star Trek. Yes. She's been on The Golden Girls and Charmed. Yes. Columbo.
That's where I'm remembering. The Golden Girls.
Designing Women. Curb Your Enthusiasm. She's been in so much. She wasn't so much. She died in 2001. So, long career for her. Yes, she's been like, so many things. That's so cool. And then John Anderson, let's see what he's been in. Because he's familiar too. Oh, look, this, he was in Psycho. Wow, he was in Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho in 1960. Wow. The Rockford Files, Rawhide, Gunsmoke, The Rifleman, Laramie, Have Gun, Will Travel. Sounds like he did a lot of Westerns.
I love finding out about what the guest stars also were in.
That's the Life and Legend of Wyatt Earp, Bonanza, Little House on the Prairie. Oh, wow. The Incredible Hulk, MacGyver.
I don't know if you guys know this, but something interesting about this episode too is that he filmed this shortly after his own wife had died.
Oh no,
that makes this episode so much, that's sadder.
Well, and it seems like he also filmed this 2 years before his own death. So
yeah.
Wow. It's like life and art.
Yeah.
And Alana suggested this episode, and I have a feeling that she did because of the scene with Worf drinking tea. And that's my theory why I think
because of her deep connection to Worf. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I think she suggested we watch this. Yeah.
Superlative Worf line there. Good tea. Nice house. Just tea. Amazing.
Well, also, like, he's like, you had a lot. It takes a lot of gall to come at me with a weapon that we know doesn't work. I admire gall. It was very, very Worf like.
Watching this again and knowing how it ended. Personally, knowing how it ended kind of ruined the rewatch for me. Like, I didn't find it rewatchable personally, because I was like, I know what they're doing. I know what's coming, because the whole time Picard is being so mysterious. Like, he's not telling his crew why he's doing the things he's doing. Why?
Well, and they do that thing that happens actually a lot over the series.
Yeah.
Where Picard's like, we're going to do this thing you're not expecting me to say. And then all they show you is Riker being like, what? Like, just giving a face.
Maybe he should tell me about that.
Yeah. Maybe I should be in the know, but I guess not. They do that. So, the other repeated trope is, of course, Troy, her powers being, you know
telepathically crazy.
Yeah, and going, and then she's like, whoa. And then the minute when she first started, I had forgotten that was part of this episode. So when she first started to hear it and like looked askance and looking worried, all I could think of was like, oh, my edible just hit. Because that's sort of what she looked like.
Yeah, very much so. Damning with faint praise, because I think if there is something you can say about Deanna Troi over the course of Next Generation, it's that the writers really don't work hard enough to give her stuff to do. But I appreciate that this episode strategically decides that, in order to not give the game away until the end of the episode, basically, Troi has to be taken out. And the antagonist character has to realize that, you know, and so does this on purpose. And I appreciate that forethought.
Was it said specifically or explicitly that's the reason why she was hearing that sound to stop her from, like, he sensed a telepath, so he went to block her?
Yeah, he sensed that she was figuring out who he was, and so he put that sound in her mind so that she couldn't focus or figure it out.
Oh, right. They said this at the, I remember now.
Which is why he had to be the one to, like, remove it from her at the end.
But you know what she never tried? She never tried, like, singing ABBA, listening to music, like, other things like that. Mm. When I get a song stuck in my head, I'm just like, if you change your mind, I'm the first in line. Take a chance.
Somehow I think it's slightly different than just being like, super trooper, squeeter, better. I mean, that's a good way to do it, obviously.
I mean, you try it. Try it next time you get a song stuck in your head.
When I get Super Trooper stuck in my head, I don't get the theme stuck in my head. I had a voice student who was learning like the alto 2 part for a production she was in of Mamma Mia. And so in my head, I have Super Trooper, knights are gonna find you falling like the sun. I just have her part stuck in my head.
Just the alto part. Well, now you're going to get it stuck in your head after talking about this.
Super Trooper, knights are gonna find you. Sorry. It's a fun part.
I know how she feels, though, because once my worst case of an earworm was, for the longest time, I had, didn't mean to shut you up,
that it
never happened, and that we were nothing.
Oh, that's no fun.
And it was over and over and over. Now you're just somebody that I used to know. And I felt like I was going crazy. Yeah.
I've mentioned on this podcast, and as you both well know, I spend a lot of time at a piano bar. And so it's certain people's renditions that I hear a lot of songs that get stuck in my head. Mm. So it's not like I know the radio version of certain songs. It's like, I know Michael Rabb, who's a pianist there. I know his version of, Rocket Man. Like, his is the version that I know. That's not Elton John.
Mm-hmm. It is weird when you get also songs that were just made up in an improv show stuck in your head.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. Because then you can't explain to another person, like, this is what somebody, they're like, what? What are you talking about?
And you can't go and listen to that song. Sometimes that helps me. Like, if I just get like one line stuck in my head, I'm like, okay, I need to listen to that song. I need to go through the whole thing. I need to know all the words so we can see this through to completion.
Right. And meanwhile, that song is gone. Yeah.
That song is gone. You can't hear it again.
I think for me, it's that. There's this one song we did where I played a cafeteria nurse in a Halloween theme show. A cafeteria worker who was in the basement of a haunted high school, and I gave birth to a monster. And her song was, I gave birth in the basement. And that is the line that gets stuck in my head.
I gave birth in the basement. Wait, I've never heard that song, but now it's going to get stuck in my head.
Well, too. Scott was there. Ask Scott about it. He'll remember.
All right.
I gave birth in the basement.
There's another part that I enjoyed about this was Data's really quick backstory upon meeting the people on the planet. He was like, let me just, and speaking of improv, that's kind of what I do in improv scenes sometimes when I'm like, I have no idea what's going on.
You so I'll be like,
wait a second, let me just set the stage here. Okay, so you are all botanists. You've known each other for a long time. You moved to this planet 5 years ago. Cut to the present. It's like, oh, thanks, Data. That really cut out a lot of scenes we didn't need.
It's funny because, this isn't a ship in the bottle episode, and yet it kind of is, right? It's like there's two places they go. There's two other people they meet. It's really in-house otherwise, apart from these two guests. And I mean, really, the house they're visiting where these two people live is absolutely like some like 1990 fresh build in from the valley. You know what I mean? It looks definitely so 90s.
Funny. I think I read the notes that they filmed it in like Pasadena or something. We're like, that looks about right.
Yeah, it was very funny to me. I was like, that looks dated now, but at the time it was the cutting edge of buildings.
This episode is so like, I Carrie, I completely understand what you like. I love procedurals basically. And like, I just am, my brain just works in a certain way where like, I like the, I still really enjoy it even when it's, something that I've seen a million times. And I like the competency of, Picard figuring, everything out, even though it does feel a little bit like, well, I'm not going to tell you what's happening because we're acting in a teleplay and it will make much more sense if I sit on this till the very end. But I completely get that, as a critique. I think, one of the things that just really strikes me about this episode too, is like, this is one of these, this feels like a very classic Star Trek story, not in like that it's campy like the original show could be or anything like that, but it is very much like, it's a very cold sci-fi story. Strange New Worlds had a couple of these a couple of years ago where it was basically like, I for lack of a better term, it's like a wouldn't it suck episode, where it's by this point in Next Gen, we've met Q and we've met like omnipotent, all powerful entities. And they always make it seem like a lot of fun. I'm going to put
why
you
are
in,
there
like,
so many of them, by the way, like how many
there's so many,
how many superpowered things in the galaxy? Why don't they, fighter, like why the Highlander style each other? Like there can be only one superpower.
I would watch that a million times. Absolutely.
And that's what we're going to discover in Discovery Season 5.
Oh, that's what
you would think. Yes.
It's going to be Immortal Fight Club. And I'm actually really here for that.
It's the body of a Dowd.
The body of a Dowd. Body of a Dowd. Oh my God.
We'll call it Beyond the Shadow of a Doubt.
Good. That's our episode. That's our episode title.
That's it.
Write it down.
Yeah. But I mean, I really like that this, it's hard to say, like, it quote unquote takes the concept seriously, but I guess it takes it, it makes the concept serious in that, like, we've met Q, we know he's like goofy, you know, like not, you know, but like, this is, you know, another, you know, omnipotent being. And it's basically just like, all I wanted was to live a normal life. I got my heart broken and I'm so powerful that without a second thought, I destroyed an entire race. And I know I need to be punished for that, but there's literally no one who can actually punish me. I have to punish myself. And I love how this episode ends, because this episode doesn't really have an arc aside from that, you know, right. Picard doesn't have an arc in this episode, just that he discovers it. And when he discovers it, he's basically just like, well, I'm glad I know. But also, like, literally that line where he just says that there's no court that can, you know, there nothing can, you know, pass sentence on your crime. You know, like, it's just this, it's such a sobering concept, you know, this idea.
But at the same time, he does have to send that report back. He does have to do the log, the captain's log. So
he does, yes.
There's a little star marker on his.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, you know, if they had explored the road of trying to imprison this immortal, you know, I guess it would be kind of impossible for them to do. But what you're saying, Michael, is so true. Like, it is very much like, this is an episode of Murder, She Wrote. Like, we know that Captain Picard Fletcher is going to figure this out if he just puts his mind to it.
Right.
And and keeps showing up like Columbo, like, oh, I'm sorry, did I catch you off guard while you're dancing? Just one more question. Well, how long you been here on this planet?
Chris's dad is here. I know.
I've got one person. I'm an old straight guy impression, and it's Columbo and my dad.
That's a great one to have, though. It is like, it is an episode of Columbo, but it's also an episode of Columbo where, like, you know, we get a solution, but we don't get a resolution, you know, very pointedly. It's basically like, you know, like, it's not the murderer gets away, nor is it the murderer goes to prison. It's more just like Columbo's basically just like, I don't know what to do with this. I can't, you know, like, it's a very despondent, it's this very, like, existential ending.
I wonder how if it would have been different if they solved it earlier on in the episode and the rest of the episode was trying to figure out what to do with him, like talking about it, like getting Starfleet involved. What do we do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Let's leave him on the planet.
I
really like this because I like any episode of Star Trek where, you know, the Federation goes in and they want to, like, you know, impose, you know, law and order and diplomacy and everything. And then just something completely steamrolls them, not in like a violent way, but more in a, like, you know, just the ship basically goes away as if the captain's basically going like, I don't know. I'm not trained to deal with this. I have no idea. I like that a lot.
It doesn't happen a lot in Star Trek,
but I enjoy it.
Complain to you because you killed them all. So what are we going to do? But why do they take so long in responding to that distress call? Why did it take so long?
I guess they were just farther away.
What were they doing?
I don't know. I don't think they were, like, doing anything in particular. I'm not really sure.
I think they were slacking off. They could have got there sooner. Come on, guys. Get that distress call.
So you're saying it's Picard's fault, everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I mean, I'm not contesting. I'm just making sure that's what. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were low on
that. Who's not? But more importantly, I don't think we ever hear see a Doubt again. This might be the only Doubt.
Or a Husanok.
No, doesn't we'll definitely he say, not see a Husanok.
Doesn't he say he's the last of his race of the Doubts? Does he not say that?
I think he does say that, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's weird. But I don't see that in the description, but maybe he does say that. We'll have to watch it again.
Oh no. Well, we can't watch it again because we've got to discuss another episode.
Okay, let's do it.
And this episode's called The High Ground, and this is the episode that Carrie saw half of but remembers all of. And
you tell me what happened.
We'll tell you. I'm going to tell you right now. So the crew of the Enterprise under the command... I'm just kidding. They actually don't have it in this one. They don't have the command.
Oh, my goodness.
What?
I don't know. They've gone away from their form. The crew of the Enterprise is sent on a mercy mission to deliver medical supplies to the war-torn, non-affiliated planet Rudia 4. In the middle, all the planets are the fourth. In the middle of the decades-long conflict with rebel separatists called the
Ansaba. That'll be the third or fourth.
Third or fourth, yeah. The Enterprise crew cannot intervene in the conflict itself, internal to the planet, because to do so would violate the Prime Directive. Ding, ding, ding. It's the Prime Directive. While Chief Medical Officer Dr. Crusher, Commander Data, and Lieutenant Worf relax in a cafe, a bomb goes off in a public plaza, injuring many bystanders. Dr. Crusher attempts to tend to the wounded bodies against Captain Picard's suggestion to return to the ship, but her efforts are interrupted when she is abducted by a man using an unknown method of teleportation. After being denied the use of the Enterprise's superior firepower to seek and destroy the Ansada's base of operations, Alexana Devos, the head of Rudian security, orders severe interrogation of all known Ansada sympathizers, an act that the Enterprise crew find immoral. Without new information from Devos, the Enterprise crew investigate the teleportation technology and find that it is used to shift between dimensions, allowing the Ansada rebels to bypass even force fields. The investigative team, which includes Wesley, lets Picard know that they need to observe more of the teleportations to be able to pinpoint the location of the base. At the Ansada base, Crusher learns her abductor is Kirrell Finn, the leader of Ansada. Crusher refuses to eat or otherwise cooperate with Finn. After several hours, Finn lets Crusher out of her restraints and requests that she help treat their wounded. Crusher discovers that the inverters, the Ansada teleportation technology, cause irreversible damage to the user's DNA, and that many of the Ansada are sick due to excessive use of the inverter. Finn admits that the inverter is their only advantage against the Rudian government. After more hours pass, Finn believes that the Federation, by providing medical aid, is working with the Rudian government and launches an attack on the Enterprise, despite Crusher's pleas not to harm her son. The Ansada manage to plant a bomb on the Enterprise warp engine. It is quickly transported into space by LaForge, but the distraction is enough to allow Finn to appear on the bridge and abduct Captain Picard. With Picard as his captive, Finn uses the inverter to come to Counselor Troi on the Enterprise and demand the Federation become involved in mediating the dispute. Returning to the planet before security can arrive, Picard, learning of Crusher's situation, tells her to continue to work on gaining Finn's confidence to hopefully end the dispute peacefully. Data and Wesley are able to use Finn's appearance to locate the Ansada base, and Commander Riker and Devos assemble their forces. After they transport into the base, the combined forces are quickly able to quell the resistance. Finn, as a last resort, attempts to execute Picard, but Devos kills him. It is her conclusion that if Finn remained alive, his imprisonment would spark more resistance, while being killed in battle will only elevate him to martyr status and reduce the violence in the short term. When a young Ansada member attempts to exact revenge on Picard, Crusher is able to convince him to drop his weapon, which Riker notes is a sign there may be more fruitful discussions to resolve the issue in the future. And that's the survivors. I do want to point out one thing they skipped over in that description, which is Beverly being like, well, I think I've got his, you know, his ear. I think he might like me, as she shows this like sketch pad of these drawings of her. And Picard's like, we can use that. And I'm like, okay, creep.
That's yeah, okay. And that's why your marriage did not work out.
That's why you guys did not stay married.
Yeah. And she took your son away from you.
For 2 decades. You
yes. Yeah. I want to see more of that. Picard's like, go over there and show some leg or something. Like, Jesus. Like,
but then right after that is when she's like, you know, if we don't get out of here, there's some things I need to say. Like, what was she going to say? I love you, you think? Or, you know.
That this is a runner throughout the show. This happens several times. It happens there's an episode of the first season and it keeps coming back and she never says it.
Right.
It's such a Scully and Mulder situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I've always hated the way that you iron your pants or whatever, you know, it'd be something very.
This is another Wesley figures it out episode, correct?
Yeah.
Like Wesley sure solves something because his mom.
Deus ex Wesley.
Deus ex Wesley, exactly. A Wesley button that I press at the end of the show.
Yeah. Well, and also he was also not only was he was part of the stakes as well as being the thing that solved the whole problem. Because she's like, yes, my son's up there. True. My son could be, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she really doesn't give a lot of the other Enterprise crew members credit, does she? She's basically like, well, my son's up there. My son's figuring it out right now.
Right. She's not like my friend Deanna Troi. She's like, my son Wesley.
No. No, because she's like, let's get real. We all know who is the actual brains on the ship. So
right. You know that, like, prime subjective.
She might be right.
The prime directive. We're the prime subjective.
We're the prime subjective.
The prime directive is so convenient, isn't it? They just keep, they mm-hmm. just like hands mm. up, prime directive, can't help you.
Can't do I'm it.
Like,
can't do a thing. Yeah.
Make mm-hmm. me your prime directives a little more clear, because you're blurring the lines a lot. Like, why can't you help these people? They know who you yeah. are. They have space travel. They have technology. Right. You're eating at their cafes.
Apparently they can shift through dimensions at this point. I guess it's not the Rudy. I mean, yeah, it's definitely an interesting set of skills that the rebels have figured out. And this guy, Richard Cox, who plays Carol Finn, I thought he was interesting. I want to see what else he's been in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was in Cruising.
Oh,
which is that movie with Al Pacino.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. That's an intense thing to be in. Cruising is like a cop drama where Al Pacino goes undercover in like the gay leather scene to find a murderer in the 80s. So it's hot and sexy is what I'm trying to tell you. And wow.
It's definitely a movie that shows its age, because when did it come out? 81, 80. And it definitely there are definitely some scenes where, like, it's like the movie, like, you know, rushes into the room basically to tell you, it's like, did you know there are gay clubs in New York City?
Right. What? Where
men are having gay sex. Stop. What? Yeah.
He's 75 years old, 1948. That's another bizarre thing to think about when you look up these people, that, you know, how old the show is.
Yeah.
1948, 75 years old.
Crazy to think that time keeps passing, even though
time keeps passing. Stop it. Oh, even though we stay the same age, it's so weird.
We do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. we're as immortal as doubts. Well, actually, maybe not, because they all died.
The interesting thing that I saw, that they're only another alien that looks exactly like human, except they just have some gray streaks in their hair.
Yep.
Like that was their only application of alien.
And he's also up on his human reference points too, because at one point he tells Dr. Crusher, like, you know, when the history books are written, I might be this planet's George Washington. And it's like, all right, guy, like, I get it, you know, like, you laid it on kind of thick here. It's like, get it? Right. You like him, right? Right? Right?
You know, but crazy? I'm thinking he has sort of a point, though. Like,
she says
something like he was a military general, not a rebel. But you know, if they lost, he would be a rebel. Like, these were rebels. Right. So, interesting. Why were they fighting again? Not America and England. I mean, why were
so they were fighting for over religious freedom, which we've solved at this point.
Okay,
it's going really good. There's no problems with religious freedom or like people trying to spread their nationalist views on religion here or abroad. Anyway,
sorry not to interrupt, but you know what would be so funny is in an episode,
if
like
someone sold a Bible while I was running for president. No, sorry, go ahead.
Money laundering. Anyway, it would be really funny if the Enterprise always comes in and they're always basically just like, you know, they're always just like, we put that nonsense behind us centuries ago, that barbarism. I would love it if the Enterprise came in too cocky and they were just like, well, Earth has never had that problem at all. and you know, and someone on the other planet could be like, actually, I looked you up. Actually, it looks like you guys have had that problem. No. That never happened.
That I could see that as an interesting Star Trek episode. Maybe not Starfleet doing that, but going to a planet where they just are in complete denial of their. I'm sure that has happened once or twice. Now that I'm saying it out loud, I'll find an episode. Just in complete denial of their past.
Well, there's a lot of things that we're meant to be having happen right now if we're going to be on the same timeline to actually achieve what Starfleet has achieved. So
We already missed the eugenics wars. Like, come on.
But we could still reunify Ireland.
We get snow reunion. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Which is supposed to happen this year.
This year. Uh-huh. Yes.
Oh, Trek in the News, April 5th. I knew there was something I wanted to say. It's First Contact Day this week.
That's true. April 5th. Oh,
it's
that's Friday.
April 5th. Mm-hmm. Of course, it doesn't happen until after the World War III, but.
Yeah, well, we got some time before we got another World War to get through, and then we'll
then
have First Contact. But we also have this month, I think in like 3 weeks, is the Galactic Diversity and Inclusion Con, where Kate Mulgrew and all those people, we got to figure out if we're going to do a little Prime Subjective field trip, which I think we should.
Yeah.
I got to remind myself.
We could go on a Saturday and just see what is to see, and then maybe get a picture or a couple pictures with, our favorite folks, if you want. Mm. See if Mike would pay for it.
He might.
Do you have $100 to send us to take a photo with Kate Mulgrew?
Can we have $100, please?
I actually don't think it costs that much. I think each person sets their own photo rate. Mm-hmm. You can either do a cheaper photo with him at the
we'll still ask for $100. Can we have $100, please?
A budget to go see. Yeah, a budget for exactly right. You get you do a selfie at the table, that's $12. But if you go and get the professional shot with the lighting, you get to pay a little bit more. But anyway, nerd, I'm a nerd.
Anyway, nerds.
I did enjoy Beverly getting a turn to be a little bit more dramatic and have some more stakes. And
And Gates McFadden shows in this episode, she's more than up to it. You know, I like this as a showcase for her. I feel like this episode, does a good job, but could dig a little bit deeper, I guess, with some of the concepts it wants to deal with. But I mean, I still think it is thoughtful in its approach.
No, I agree. I think some things would be different if they were to film it again now. But
I was just saying it's funny how when this aired, even though, I mean, the troubles were happening in Ireland, for example, which is why they use that as an example. And that's why this episode was not broadcast in Ireland, because of that one line. Go figure.
Oh, interesting.
From an American perspective, it's interesting how, the concept of terrorism in the early 90s was such an abstract concept of that's a thing that happens over there, and obviously that has changed significantly.
Oh
since
my gosh.
So
I just, I mean, I'm sorry, when you were talking, I was still thinking about the Irish unification of 2024.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We got 8 months left to make it happen.
Maybe it'll happen over Eurovision. Maybe there'll be some sort of Eurovision thing that could bring us all together.
I wish Dana had brought that up. You'd think he'd find that interesting.
It happened at the Eurovision competition when Ireland and the UK tied and they had to, figure it out. That's very funny. But yeah, any other thoughts on this episode before we move to our three body problem moment and recommendations?
Yes. When I was watching this episode, Scott walked by and he was like, "No, you're not watching this episode, are you?" But he got it confused with the other episode where there was a handsome guy in love with Beverly. And I'm like, the one where the Trill is in love with her and then he dies. And then she has Riker, but it's really the Trill, but they never talk about that again. And I said, no. This is another episode where a handsome rebel.
She has a lot of handsome guys who like her.
She does. Yeah. They have a type. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my final thought on that episode.
Oh, very nice. Well, then let's do a slight dive into the three body problem. I know, Mike, you've seen one episode.
I've seen a few. Yeah.
I've seen three or no. I'll tell you exactly how many episodes I've seen. But what are your initial thoughts about the first episode then?
Well, the first episode ends. So I go into this show with a lot of anticipation and a lot of how are they going to pull this off? And to be sure, the stuff that I'm most concerned about has not happened yet. But as far as taking what's a very dense and arguably dry book. Not boring, because I didn't find it boring, but I could imagine others finding it dry. Mm. They do a good job of dramatizing it and also opening up the cast in a way that doesn't feel like a betrayal of the principles of the show. It's very thoughtful. Mm-hmm. It's very, you know, it uses some of the same reference points and tells some of the same stories. It just kind of splits up some of the key characters into multiple characters and kind of gives kind of a more perspective. And I think has a little bit more thriller elements. But it does it in a way that I don't feel like it's betraying the source material so far. So one episode in, I really want to see some more. Yeah. And a really good cast, too. Really, really good cast.
So we'll talk about my thoughts on just the first episode. Is that the splitting up of characters was interesting, but I felt maybe like these people feel extra. They don't feel like needed. I felt like, especially Jack, the Jack character. I was like, we don't need him. We don't need that guy. He's like extra. He's like not really adding anything.
Well, in some ways, he facilitates to the show. I feel like, yeah, he facilitates some things just with his wealth at some point. But yes,
I do. Okay. I do feel like maybe later in the episodes that will explain itself. But in the books, for example, everyone is Chinese.
Yeah.
And so they made this more of a diverse, multicultural cast. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking that the only people that I think are from the book are perhaps the investigator,
and the doctor,
the
older woman doctor,
the older woman and her daughter,
also known as Rosalind Chow, also known
Rosalind
as
Chow.
Yes.
I knew there was a reason I brought this up. This is Trek adjacent.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for mentioning that, because I was like, we can talk about this on the Prime Subjective now because Keiko is in it.
Well, we can Rosalind talk about Chow is in it. We want.
We can talk whatever we want, but this makes it more better, right?
More legit, for our hardcore Star Trek fans out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So the three-body problem, read it, watch the show.
I've seen the whole thing, and I can,
All eight episodes.
I've seen all eight, yes.
Okay.
And there's, I will say that there have been some critiques that people wanted to see what the budget would have been like if they'd done this on HBO. I didn't find that. I didn't find that to be wanting there. I still think they did a really incredible job.
The effects are really cool and amazing.
The effects are cool. Yeah.
Netflix spent a lot of money on this too. So that's an interesting thing to say.
Listen, keep going.
I was just saying that I think people get snobby about Netflix versus HBO and but in the end, money's green. And, one of the other complaints is that the character, one of the characters that they interpolated is that impossibly beautiful woman, that one doctor who's just I think people get a little she's so beautiful. How could she be so smart? And they get really, butthurt about that.
Hollywood. It's like they Hollywoodize it.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, we're going to be mad there's a beautiful person in this. I'm not mad about that.
For me, it's not that mad that she's beautiful. It's that she's too perfectly done, well done, and makeup and excellent. Yeah. Everything about her is too perfect. But that's okay. It's it's like a show. A little bit of reality in my characters, but still.
Yeah, yeah. Just out of curiosity, why is it that it's always people in the scientific field that when they're attractive like that on TV, it's a problem? Are there any people who watch a cop show and these cops are too pretty? I don't buy it. Are there? Maybe. I don't know.
I think there are a lot of pretty cops on TV. I'm like,
yeah, but people are not mad about it because I think they also think that there's maybe a lower barrier of entry to becoming a cop versus a low particle physicist.
Yeah.
At Oxford.
Yeah. I don't know that many low particle physicists.
So. I only know one, and it's my uncle. So
Oh, really?
I'm
sure he's a beautiful man.
He's a handsome guy. He's got nine fingers. from a circular saw accident he and my dad had in the garage when they were kids. So he's been always been interesting to me.
But it didn't stop him from being.
It did not. No, he was.
Didn't stop him.
He was in the Navy. He got a master's and he helped discover the Higgs boson. He's actually one of the coolest people I know.
Would you mind when we get together next week, can we just talk a little bit more about this? Just like a little pepper, just like a little.
Sure.
Bit,
sure. Yeah. I'll watch some dessert. More. Yeah.
Little three body problem dessert for our Star Trek podcast.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say about the first episode. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go.
Oh, well, no, I just want to say one extra thing I want to say about the first episode too, is that, you know, one of my, you know, kind of barriers for, you know, getting invested in the show is like, you know, you read the book and you're just like, okay, the show has to do X, Y, and Z. Right. And for this first episode, it had me thinking, okay, you need, you know, one of the key characters that we talked about, you know, is a character who makes a very bold choice, you know, over the course of the narrative. And it's just like, if you don't contextualize this, if you don't do the work to make it understandable why this person does this, nothing about this story is going to matter, you know?
But so they like, did. I feel like they did right. a good
but
job.
But they do. Yeah. They do. Yeah. Yes, I agree.
They talk about this Chinese, the Cultural Revolution in China, which I never learned about at all. So it like makes me have to go and learn about that to figure out why and who and when. Yeah. And
I think once you start seeing mechanics of the game too, Mike, you're really gonna like it a lot.
That's the stuff I was most concerned about, because just reading the book, going like, how would they do this? I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, no, I really liked how they handled that. So
okay,
but yeah, we'll talk more about that next week. Any other recommendations or things we're enjoying? I have a recommendation actually. Which is the game, if you like being the center of attention and playing games that are not too challenging, I recommend Princess Peach Showtime, which is a new game on the Switch, where Princess Peach is going to a night at the theater when some dastardly evil character named Madame Grape comes in and takes over the theater complex, where there are multiple theater productions. There's like, you know, it's like 24 shows going on. And in each show, Peach has to go in and be the star of that show. She gets a new outfit to be like the ninja or the figure skater or the detective.
It's called Princess Peach Showtime.
And so she gets like a different skill for each outfit she's wearing. And she's a star and she solves all the problems. And it's not harder, but it's a lot of fun. It's very cute. And it's, I highly recommend it. So, the figure skating is particularly satisfying, I will say.
Wow. I'm just your resident watching too many K-dramas on Netflix girl. So I will recommend Chicken Nugget, which I talked about earlier. It's funny. It's a comedy. It's based on a web comic. Really hysterical. So
check that out.
Check that out. It's about somebody who somebody's daughter turns into a chicken nugget.
Oh.
Maybe she did. Maybe she didn't. Let's find out. Watch Chicken Nugget.
This is the one with the time travel?
There's a little bit. Just a wee smidge.
Okay. All right. And Michael, did you have a recommendation?
I don't, aside from seeing Dune 2, which I forget if we talked about.
Oh yeah. So good.
We did, but I didn't get a chance to see it yet. It makes me sad.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go see it, Carrie. Go see it.
I know. I'm going to wait. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to have to go by myself because there's no other way. I'm just going to go.
Say, hey, Scott, here's the baby. I'm out of here. I'm going to go see Dune 2.
Yeah.
Or you get your parents, your mom to come, you know, a little babysit and then go check it out.
You can come babysit. You want to babysit?
Me? I'm good.
It's not a problem. He doesn't do much. He just sort of sits there and plays with his toys.
Oh, Arlo. Well.
Poops. He poops sometimes.
Yeah, that's the part I don't want to engage with, really, is the pooping. I'm really all good on that, on cleaning up smaller creatures' poop. I don't even have
to. You can leave it. You don't have to do anything about it.
I wouldn't do that. I was a professional. I wouldn't leave it. But on that note, I think we've come to the end of our time. And so we thank you for joining us for another episode of The Prime Subjective. We'll be back next week to talk Discovery, season five, the final season, episode one. We'll talk a little bit more Three Body Problem. On that note, we don't need a song to end. We can just end the episode like this. It's over.